Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Thursday, October the 7th, 2021, 13 and a half minutes past the hour, and we have got a great hour of programming for you here today. Do want to remind people that On the Air with Glenn Coble will be on after I go off this morning from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, Swap Shop 12 to 1, and the Adam the Computer Guy show today, 2:10 until 3 p.m. Also want to thank legendary ABC newsman Sam Donaldson for joining us in hour number one this morning. This hour we have a great guest from the state of Ohio. He's been on before, but it's been about a decade since he's been on the program, so this hour it will be great to catch up on his life and times and thoughts on things. He is a legend in the state of Ohio, a legendary player with the Ohio State Buckeyes during the Woody Hayes era. Then he went on to become mayor of the city of Columbus from 1992 through the year 2000. What a pleasure it is to welcome back to this show after a long absence, Mayor Greg Leshutka. Mayor Leshutka, how are you?
Good, Scott. How are you? Good day to be alive, and nice to be back with your program at this point in time.
It's been a while. We're glad to hear from you. What's been new in your life? What's Greg Leshutka doing these days?
Well, I'm kind of semi-retired, and I have a few things going, obviously, with 9 grandchildren and 4 children. It's been a little busy keeping track of them, and that should be the priority for all of us. You know, our families at the end of the day, but sometimes that gets lost as we go through the pressures of life. But I still have a finger in the pie on some business things and some boards, and we have a farm in Holmes County, and I'm growing organic vegetables with my wife. And long story short, balance in these crazy times seems to be reasonably blessing me, so I'm quite fortunate, Scott.
For somebody who led a very competitive life, legendary football player, as I said, mayor of the city of Columbus, a big city in all the United States, is it hard to draw back a little bit and say, well, maybe it's time for other people to do that stuff?
You know, one of the hardest things I think for anybody is to know when to hang it up. And I don't mean hanging it up by not doing anything. It's just that what you were doing, when to leave it and move on to something else and leave it to somebody else. I've seen too many examples where that isn't what happens. And people get frustrated. They don't have a good end of the life run. And I was fortunate to see that happen and think about it. And as I told my wife, as we thought about a third term as mayor, just because I can do it and, you know, perhaps be elected, I think that probably would have happened, doesn't mean I should do it, and there's other things to get on. So I've been lucky to have 8-year chunks professionally, and that's kind of a nice rotation, you know, a little bit of business, a little bit of politics, a little bit of law, and not too many people can say that.
You just made a very interesting point, Mayor Leshutka. Just because I should do it...
Call me Greg.
Oh, Greg, okay. Just because I should do it in the political world doesn't mean I should. Just because I can doesn't mean I should. This doesn't seem to be the case with a lot of politicians. I'm not going to say all, but not a lot. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a certain amount of feeling that what you're all about, maybe nobody else can do, and that's not true. There's always a time and a place for everything, and I was lucky because I was practicing law and then became city attorney, which is elected in Columbus. Left that and then practiced with Squire Sanders and Dempsey for about 8 years, and then went back to become mayor. And so I was in and out, And I think that's what our forefathers wanted us to do. You know, if we think about our founding fathers and the great example that came from George Washington, there were those who wanted to make him the monarch, and he shut that down real quickly. There were those who wanted him to run for a third term, and he said, nope, two's about what we should expect. And that held until FDR went for a third term, and then there was a reaction. We had the constitutional amendment to limit presidents to two terms. And I think that's good. You need to have a little change. There's people out there. Our democracy expects people to understand the private sector, the how government works, and the not-for-profit side. So all three kind of have a balance. But it does take a little courage at times to say, you know, enough's enough. I probably could, but it doesn't mean I should.
Some mayors can go on forever, some senators, some House members. Would you be in favor for term limits on all political offices?
I'm for the voters making a decision, and the problem with term limits, in my opinion, is you have then an embedded staff who seems to know more than the elected officials sometimes. And even though that staff may be appointed, there's a good number who are civil service, and that often is good. But I like to have people be accountable to the voters. You know, some years ago we had a provision in the Ohio Constitution where you could vote for a bond issue and it would be permanent unless it was overridden by a significant majority. That's not a good thing. I like to have issues and people come before the voters, let them state their case, why they should be reelected, why they should be reauthorized, and the voters are pretty smart when you give them the information. I have high respect for our voters. I worry a little bit that we're dumbing down the education and we don't have people as focused because of a wide variety of things on what's going on in government. But nevertheless, that's a sub-issue to the better topic of accountability by the electorate, because that's, for all intents and purposes, we are a country accountable to the citizens, not to anybody else.
A lot of people here in Marion were stunned a few weeks ago. We've been having an issue with our auditor in regard to reconciling our books here locally. And the state auditors came down, and a question was asked by a city council member at city council meeting, how often does this happen in the state of Ohio? And the state auditor said, more than you think, because auditors don't have to have any experience elected into that position. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's correct, but luckily we have a check and balance. We have another tier that could come down and review it. Certainly, I think foundational for all of us is the issue of trust. And I think there's far too little of that in institutions and with people. You know, we're still a country when you shake a hand and look someone in the eye here in Ohio, and I think in Marion and in Columbus and Holmes County, where I am right now, that means something. So when there's a lack of that, and that may have triggered whatever the issue was, and I'm not familiar with it in Marion, at least the citizens know there's a appeal process that can take place. The state auditor can look at it and then kind of verify for government integrity what's the right thing. So, you know, this is not a Russia. This is not a China where things get dictated. You know, we're a democracy and we have built-in checks and balances. And I think the state auditor probably was right in saying that. There are times you want to go in and look and make sure things are right. And when you have a major lack of integrity, if that occurs, then people can be held accountable. It doesn't just get swept under the rug.
In politics, there always has been a certain degree of I call it sharp elbowness, a little bit of name calling, negative ads run against your opponent. That's pretty much been going on for a long time. Do you feel it's gotten worse on the local level, particularly?
You know, that's a question of perspective. And my wife and I just finished an upstate New York 2-week trip, which was just fascinating, and it fits with you, what you're talking about. One of our stops was at Grant's Cottage. And Grant is really understated, in my opinion. Clearly, we know him as a general who won the Civil War. He earned the respect and trust of Lincoln. They were joined at the hip. But he was not a man who enjoyed a privileged early raising. He had a tough go, and he was discredited often early in his military career, but then he rose up, and then he served 2 terms as president. You know, a little bit like Eisenhower, you know, a venerable military man, and then he became president of the United States. And the interesting thing about that time period, it was brutal. You know, we had accusations going on that probably even eclipse what we are doing now on spirited language against opponents and the polarization. I remember listening to a commentary by Governor Cuomo, the older one, not the current one, and Newt Gingrich. And Newt was saying, you know, we have more big issues today than we did since the 1860s. Of course, that was the time period we had the Civil War. But you look at Reconstruction, you look at the carnage that occurred to both whites and blacks on Reconstruction. Language was secondary to brutal killings. That's going on in a different way in our cities with crime rising up. But it's not a civil war that's hot. It's a cold civil war that's going on. So I think we'll get through it. I think that at the end of the day, you have to look in the mirror as an individual, whether you're the candidate, and it's the candidate, and it's the citizens' expectation of those candidates, what they will accept in this give and take that provides us an election atmosphere. And you got to live with yourself at the end of the day, and I think that even though we focus on some of the candidates who pull some very hard punches, if they're fair, so be it. If they're not, then you have to live with those consequences, and eventually it will come out. But there's a personal accountability at the end of the day for it, and I personally don't think that's the way to run all too often for an election.
When we look at the last 2 years, nearly 2 years now, certainly the story is the pandemic, COVID-19. As somebody who was involved in politics, highly involved in the community, still is to some degree, what have you made of these last 2 years?
You know, it was interesting. In the middle of COVID, my wife and I went to New York because our son had gotten out of the Marine Corps. He served in Afghanistan, was living in Manhattan, and it was February of 1919, so it was just beginning to evolve, right? I came home, and I was sick for a month, but I wasn't hospitalized, and nobody knew necessarily in the marketplace much about COVID. And then it started surfacing. And there's a book by an author I think highly of, John Barry. He wrote a book about the 1918-19 Spanish flu. And that chapter of history, overlaying with World War I, you know, our country went through the challenges and how public health, cities wrestled with it were interesting. And George W. Bush recommended that to his staff, and they prepared for a bit of a burp we had subsequent to when he was there. But those supplies were depleted, never replaced. Nobody was thinking about a pandemic like we had. on a national scale. And I think that a lot of people were trying hard to make sense of what was happening at the time, using their best judgment. I think if there's a fatal mistake that occurred, people didn't say, we don't know. We don't know if this is the right thing, but we think this is the, what we should do based on the information we had. And the economic carnage that occurred, if, in my opinion, was as meaningful, maybe even more so than the health carnage. So many small businesses did not get the support they needed. And I'm a big small business person. I think that whether it's Marion or Columbus, those are people who are putting everything at risk to make it work. That little coffee shop that isn't a national chain. And on the health side, we learned a lot. Some of it very disappointing. I, for one, have no question that this originated in China, whether it was by accident or on purpose, is yet to be revealed. But anything other than that falls short of my mark, and they have really accelerated that tension between ourselves and China. But the implications worldwide and for places like, obviously, Marion and Franklin County and Holmes County are significant as we get through this. And it won't go away. We will not have a vaccine that will probably permanently protect us against COVID. And I don't think it'll go away totally. But this is a tough lesson, and we haven't really had a chance to reflect on the broader issues. Just one more point in conclusion. You know, COVID gets the focus. I mentioned the economic impacts, but you look at the mental health issues that have taken place with people. The number of domestic strife, my understanding is that a lot of couples are looking at each other and they're going different ways after all this. Addiction has skyrocketed. Child abuse, which was reported through school attendance, now has been dropped off, and yet I don't think it's really decreased. So there's a lot of reflection that has to take place, Scott, after this is over, on what we did right and what we did wrong.
When we look at Ohio right now, certainly the big talk is vaccination rate. Now, where we sit on October 7th, the vaccination rate in Ohio, fully vaccinated, is 50%. In the country, it's 57%. So we're about 7% below the national vaccination rate. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it goes back to the term of trust. You know, we had so many tugs and pulls on information early on, and in certain communities there's a great distrust of using the medical excuse to create problems. That distrust in the black community is pretty deep historically, and yet at the same time it also is a function of what age group. My wife shared with me this morning as we had our call, she's back in Columbus, and I'm going to head back today, that those of us over 65, those of us who are vaccinated hover in the 80% range. So it's other groups, maybe not the seniors, and yet, you know, here in Holmes County, we're seeing an increase of COVID major problems. Not just the comorbidity issues of people who had, you know, problems that maybe weren't a death caused by COVID, but by something else complicated by COVID. Nevertheless, it got thrown into the COVID death bucket. But I think there's enough evidence now I got my shots as early as I could. I went Monday and got both the booster and the flu shot because I'm well beyond 65, and I'm doing this as much for my kids and grandkids. I don't want to be a burden to them and have them to worry about it. They have enough going on in their lives right now, and my wife's of the same mindset as we think about things, and I mentioned we had this two-week trip up in upstate New York, which is really understated, by the way. It's beautiful. It's like some of the pockets we have here in Ohio. When you get away from the big cities, including, you know, the country around Marion, it is so beautiful, but a good number of people don't even know it's there. But COVID, we were mindful of it. We kept our distance. We did what was responsible, as I mentioned, for ourselves, but also for what I think the patriarch and matriarch should do for their kids and grandkids and not be a burden to them if possible.
As a gentleman who has had the vaccine, as you have said, and the booster shot, what do you say to half of the state who has not had it? What advice would you give them at this point?
Well, I'm a big believer that if you give people the right information, they'll make the right decision. And there may be some concerns about the vaccination, but I think people need to do their own homework, present them the arguments, and encourage them to look at it and put it in perspective on where they're going in the broader picture. So my hope is that we'll get back to some normalcy sooner than later, but my son, who runs the Children's Hospital Network in Ohio, we have seven children's hospitals, and they were at the tipping point because of advanced influenza coming in this year, much earlier than the winter season. And there were certain upticks in COVID, but really was the influenza. So there's funny things happening in the medical marketplace affecting us. And, you know, we all have to kind of think about not only ourselves, but a responsibility to others. And, again, I encourage people, just do your homework, get the facts. Don't use social media as your only outlet. Go to good sources, and they're out there, and I think that will end up where we should be.
The city in which you were the mayor, Columbus, right now has a mask mandate. The state had mask mandates for a long time. This has become a huge topic, maybe even more than the disease and the vaccination themselves on the whole right now. What do you make of the whole mask situation and the anger that it has brought out in people?
Well, we've had so many misstatements by people that masks really aren't protected, that masks should be. I, for one, do not wear a mask outside. I think that's excessive. I think it is an overcomplication to people's lives. When we get into closer contact, there may be merit of masks that are legitimately screening, transferring from one person to another, the COVID virus. Catherine and I, my wife and I, support Pro Musica in Columbus, and this weekend is their opening season for the fall. They're going to social distance people. There's masks required inside the theater for both musicians and attendees. We're not going to go. Although we do host two cellists as house guests when they come in, one of them will stay with us. It's just not a comfortable experience in our minds. So back to the point that there's unintended consequences beyond just the health side, the economics of what that will do to a group like Pro Musica, or other public entertainment activities, as listed in today's Morning Dispatch, that are going to have mask mandates and other requirements, is going to have an impact. So I respect what they're saying, and then I'll make a choice, as I did, that we're not going to attend. On the other hand, we'll go to high school football games. No masks are required there. It's outside. And we'll enjoy a little bit of what is a strong tradition in Ohio, which is Friday night football for high school.
Just to make this clear, and not to harp on the mask issue, but not attending the event this weekend, is that based in the uncomfortable nature of the mask or the belief that masks don't work, in your opinion?
No, there's no commentary on the mask. I've seen both sides of the argument on masks, and I don't know that there's a clear-cut decision on it. I just find it very uncomfortable to sit there with a mask and try to enjoy music that is very high quality. Pro Music is a terrific organization. They're at least bordering on world-class content with great talent. But it is not the experience that I want to enjoy when I normally would see them, so we're not going to go.
Final question on this particular issue with the masks. If that mandate was not in place, in the condition we're in right now with the pandemic, would you go to the event?
Probably, because we'll probably, you know, spread out a little bit as they're requiring it. But that's not an alternative. That's before, so I haven't given them much thought.
There's a very interesting question in Ohio right now about Republicanism. When we look at Greg Lashutka, you are, I assume, still a Republican. You were a Republican governor, or a mayor, excuse me, of Columbus. What makes you a Republican? What fundamentals, when you were choosing a political party, were important to you in the Republican Party?
Well, I'm a center-right kind of guy, very much economically. I think we are losing some of those principles. I look at what's going on in Washington on these huge modern monetary theory expenditures of money that I don't think are really going to improve our country. I have to scratch my head where we went through. So fiscal responsibility, for one. Two, I believe in individual rights, as our founders provided, that we are a great country with responsibility. I strongly believe in opportunity for all. I do not embrace that we are a systemically racist country. We have our challenges, but we have come a long ways. And I strongly believe in the strong will of people, and you give them opportunities, and they will seize them in our country. Just look at what we've done over the years. I believe in a strong military defense, and I think that has greatly pivoted here recently. I'm troubled by what I'm seeing by our national military leadership as a veteran, and this emphasis not on preparedness, but on looking at ways that I believe are a bit manufactured on critical race theory and others. I believe in the religious freedom. I think we have drifted from that, and it has been a hallmark of what has made our country great. And I believe in the ability of the founders putting together a framework in which our government has really been a shining example. Lastly, I believe in the free enterprise system. I think our capitalistic system has not been perfect. I'm troubled by the strength when you look at the Fortune 500. 50% of those are some of these IT companies that have crushed small business. My wife was not only a lawyer of great reputation, but she ran a small business. But there was the obvious shadow of what Amazon was doing to crush retailers like her, and she just couldn't stay in business. It was complicated by far more because she imported from Europe housewares, and that became very complex, and she eventually closed down the business after 14 successful years. But the free enterprise system, I think, has been terrific, and we're moving more and more to a socialist position in a lot of fronts, and that disturbs me.
Republicanism in Ohio, as I had said, is in a very interesting place right now. We have a governor, longtime Republican, Mike DeWine, who will be primaried next year in his gubernatorial race. First time a sitting governor in Ohio has been primaried, I believe, in over 100 years, is the statistic on that. A lot of this has to do with the pandemic and Governor DeWine's handling of the pandemic. What have you made of Governor DeWine's handling of the pandemic?
Well, as I said earlier, I give a lot of people who are in those decision-making positions a wide berth. I remember sitting in Columbus as there was discussion about the Arnold Schwarzenegger Classic. This is huge. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger has a fondness for Columbus. Jim Larimore, who was from Nationwide, was a good friend and still is of Arnold. They founded this international event, and it was shuttered, not in part, in total. And it was at the cutting edge of the pandemic. And everybody just gasped, you know, because there were people coming in from, you know, all over the world. And if that was going to happen, what lied ahead? And there was really a lack of information in no small part because China didn't cooperate. They didn't give us the DNA to help move ahead on a variety of points. And so I think there were decisions made that maybe can be rethought because it is not just the health side, as I said earlier in the show, it's also the economic side. A lack of appreciation in some quarters on small business and what could take place. So back to Mike for a second. I've known Mike for a long time. I don't have any question that his heart was in the right spot. I think he tried to do the right thing based on the information. He established a number of committees that were to give him advice from businesses or others who were associated with what was going on. Clearly, he moved in a direction much faster than the city of Columbus did to help small business respond and open their doors better. So I'm not a critical of Mike. I'm going to support him. I think there's other, you know, good candidates out there, but I'm not convinced that changing horses at this point, given everything going on, makes any sense to me as a Republican.
Can you understand why at this point he is being primaried, why a lot of polls, and polls are what they are showing that Mr. Renacci is in the lead of a Republican primary at this point, and a lot can change in almost a year, but do you understand it, why this has happened?
Well, I do. I think people are very upset. They're upset at a lot of things, and then people in elected office or on the point of a business or in leadership, that frustration is deep and broad. And I'm one of those. I'm very frustrated by this moment in time. And so there will be folks, and I think Mr. Renacci is a good person. He obviously has had a successful business career. There's other candidates in the mix. So I'm not at all surprised. The same thing, obviously, is, you know, if we look at Washington, look at what's going on with the Democratic Party in the House. You got the you know, the squad and pushing for things that are so contrary to, I think, reasonableness, in my opinion, on where our country has been and where it should go. And that creates pressures for Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker. I'm not overly sympathetic to her, but that's a different issue. But she has to live with that. And the President has to try to fashion some result and is not getting much success. And the Senate side, you have Joe Manchin, who's saying, you know, maybe we should pause for a moment and not put $5 trillion of money that really we can't pay for right now unless we want to saddle our kids and grandkids with that. I think Joe's voice is pretty reasonable, but it is certainly not reflected overly broadly by his Senate peers except for one, and that's the senator from Arizona. So there's a lot of frustration out there, Scott, and it is, we are not into a normal lifestyle as yet, politically, business-wise. We can't get, there's inflation is driving up costs in the grocery stores. You can't get certain products because they're not available, chips for one. So the anxiety by people, I think, often reflects in the political marketplace.
As you said, you will continue to support Governor Mike DeWine in this Republican primary. But as we have said, 100 years since even a sitting governor has been primaried by Democrat, Republican, their own parties. Would it surprise you if he didn't win the primary?
Nothing surprises me anymore. I think he will win, but at the end of the day, you're just never sure. You know, there's a long way to go. As the old adage goes, a day is a lifetime in politics. So whatever's happening today, that could change. Just look at our president. You know, he was riding very, very high now back in February. We were in the aftermath of a tragedy that occurred in the Capitol. And now he is hovering at some of the lowest efforts. I don't want to get into it, but I clearly am frustrated by the decision and how we exited Afghanistan. Not whether we should have, but how we did it. It was inexcusable, in my opinion. And I think a number of other Americans feel the same way. You know, it's time to kind of maybe leave, but we have this, so many things going on, Scott, that create a problem. So every day you have to wake up personally and whatever role you have and do the best you can on the best information and what's the greater good. I think in a final note on that, just if I could, you know, I'm old enough now to know when we were kind of unselfish and what was good for America came first. You know, what was good for Marion came first. What was good for Columbus came first. And I think there's some people who don't look at it that way. It's what's good for me first. And I think that is one of the biggest problems we have in this country, where it's tailored for what's good for the individual, not the greater good. You know, I think back to John Kennedy, who said, you know, think not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. As a Democrat, he said it right. It makes no difference whether you're Democrat, Republican, or Independent. We've got to start thinking about it along those lines more.
Final question here on politics, because I want to move on to some Ohio State things here in our last 10 minutes. But a lot of Republicans in Ohio have came to me and said, we support DeWine, or we support Renacci, or we support any of the other candidates in the Republican primary, but just the fact that there's a primary and just the fact that there has been a Republican governor during this divisive pandemic with Ohio only 50% vaccinated, regardless of how the primary turns out, it's going to hand the governorship to the Democrat. What do you make of those statements? And do you as a Republican have that worry?
I don't think so. I don't see much energy by the Democratic leadership, either with individual candidates or you have to look at the entire executive branch of government. There's some awfully good Republicans who are there, and I'm a little partial to Frank LaRose, who was our Secretary of State. You know, he followed John Husted. He's a veteran. He cares about election issues. Ohio's been a punching bag for people who are saying we haven't done it right. And I just start scratching my head saying, no, we've done it really well. And so I don't think that there should be a major concern. So I'm not overly focusing on that.
One more quick question on this, because I do want to get to football. The Republican legislature took away the power of the governor to make health orders. Was that the right choice?
I don't think so. I think you have to have, you know, we start delegating these things to a legislative body that is not going to operate quickly. You need to have some power with the executive branch to do the best job they can for the greater good and move as swiftly as possible. If we had an ability to do what they had in the old days and in some places still, town meetings, and then you cast your ballot and have a debate, great. That's not how we're structured. We got a lot of busy people. We have a lot of issues going on, and that's why you elect a governor to make those decisions.
Turning to Ohio State, and certainly you could not get away from this story this week. You know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that it happened. Former Ohio State coach Urban Meyer, now with the Jacksonville Jaguars, was in Columbus, was in Ohio last weekend with the Jaguars, stayed, went to his restaurant in Columbus. And if you haven't heard, you've probably been living under a rock out there in listener land. But apparently what happened was... he got a little friendly, let's be polite here, he got a little friendly with a young lady. He admits to this, the video's out there. The owner of the Jaguars called his behavior inexcusable. They haven't won a game. What did you make of what happened with Urban Meyer last weekend?
Yeah, I just think it was the wrong thing at the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, Urban's a high energy guy. I know him to be a man of faith. I wouldn't be surprised if he was just overly friendly. And I don't say that in a way to defend the actions, because when you're in those situations, you just have to have a sixth sense, particularly with the transparency that comes from cell phones and the ability to do what never would have been possible back in my time period, because cell phones make everything transparent, and social media. And so it's a different world out there. I feel badly for Urban. I feel horrible for his family. He's got a great family. And, you know, it does have a little tarnish back on Ohio State, even though he's no longer affiliated. I wish him luck getting through all that. I have no idea where it takes him. I think that the owner of the Jaguars was right. He's got to talk about what is right for his organization. And Urban hasn't had the best first year as the head coach of the Jaguars. But clearly he had a national championship at Ohio State. But that in and of itself isn't as important as things he did to help the university well beyond football. As one of my favorite coaches, Jim Tressel, said, you know, football is what we do. It's not who we are. It's what we do. It's not who we are. And I'm a Woody Hayes guy. And Woody always emphasized the importance of doing the right thing. And, yes, people could say, you know, he didn't end on the highest note going. What they don't know is he had a bit of a challenge with his diabetic experience, and there were a few things. But he was one heck of a guy who did so much for the university well beyond football and encouraged all of us to get an education. Urban had done that. Jim Tressel did that. Earl Bruce and John Cooper as well. You know, this is a program that has an emphasis on being a student athlete, as much as I question it now with all the stuff going on NIL, payments and everything that's swirling around with the far too much money. But back in conclusion on Urban, he'll get through this. It's just unfortunate. So time to let it exhaust itself and move on.
Ohio State losing their first game. Ohio State's become so accustomed to winning. The fans have become accustomed to winning. Were you surprised?
I was at the game with a good friend of mine, and I watched the game, and it was not an Ohio State team that I recall. There was a lack of passion for whatever reason. They Oregon was well coached. they scored two touchdowns on the same play with no corrections on the defense. And the defense, you know, clearly has had their problems, but they've come around here recently, and as I thought they would, because they have a great coaching staff. And the players on the defensive side, at the linebacker position particularly, you know, were fairly green. Ohio State, you know, bounced back. But I was surprised at what I thought was a lack of passion at the first game. And you have a quarterback who's really a fine young man, but he's, you know, it's his first start. And that's not an easy start. So with Justin Fields moving on, you know, we were spoiled. And there's a reason you have guys playing and getting seasoned. And certainly the last game against Rutgers, you know, our quarterback just had a stellar performance. So I think we're in a groove now. I think it's not going to be an easy remainder of the schedule. You got Penn State, who will be tough. Michigan State will be fairly tough, but and then Michigan's looking good too. So we've got a ways to go, but I think we're getting to a point now where we're going to be competitive, whether we win or not. Who knows? We got to play the game. That's why we do it. Oregon showed that. You know, all the credit to them for doing it. But now tuck that away and move on.
With 1 minute left, this is a long pass to throw, but Ohio State linebacker Kayvon Pope dismissed because of a tweet. Excuse me. What'd you make of that?
I think it was more than a tweet. I think it was his actions on the sideline showing again, you know, I'm more important than the team. I'm more important than the team. Back to what I was talking about earlier, it wasn't a team focus, even though he's disappointed. You know, those of us who played the game weren't always pleased about certain things that happened, but you say, okay, I got to sacrifice my own emotions for the team. It was what his actions on the sideline followed by the tweet. And I wish him luck. I just think he made a huge mistake. I wish him luck wherever he goes. And you have to know now with these transfer portals, Scott, there's a lot of players who aren't sticking around for 4 years. If we think about the backdrop, the nil issue on imaging and so forth creates a huge problem because these kids are making money. Look at that freshman quarterback leaving his high school team in Texas, coming to Ohio State, having a little tough time. That would never have happened in my time. And a lot of stuff has changed between then. I don't think some of the changes recently are all good. Something should be done to help the players get a little better grounding on what's going on in a robust financial situation in athletics. But there's a lot of unintended consequences, and some of them are very bad.
With 10 seconds left to go, was it the right decision to remove him from the team?
Yes.
You know, Mayor Greg Leshutka has been our guest this 45 minutes, and we didn't even get into Ohio State football in his day and Woody Hayes and all the great players there, so you have to promise to come back in the near future.
I'll try to do that. I like you, Scott. I think finally the people of your neck of the woods are Marion, and look forward to doing that. Have a great day.
Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye. Mayor Greg Leshutka, former Ohio State legend and mayor of Columbus for 8 years, 1992 through the year 2000. Glenn Coble next, Scott Spears heading for the dugout. This week, do you have a favorite Hillary Clinton story?
Well, you know, I would see her quite often. One of the things I most remember her about was when Sacagawea was introduced. She was in charge of that